Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. There's a new CEO for DMI. Dairy Management Inc. is funded by America's 31,000 dairy farmers as well as dairy importers. It was created to help increase sales and demand for dairy products. DMI and its related organizations work to increase dairy demand through research, education, and innovation, and to maintain confidence in dairy foods, farms, and businesses. DMI also manages National Dairy Council and the American Dairy Association, was founded by the U.S. Dairy Export Council and the Innovation for U.S. Dairy. Barbara O'Brien was unanimously approved by the Dairy Management Inc. Board of Directors to succeed Tom Gallagher as CEO. Gallagher is leaving to expand his teaching commitments, he said. Gallagher will remain as an advisor to O'Brien as needed through July 31st of next year. O'Brien met virtually with ag reporters on Thursday, along with DMI Board Chair Marilyn Hershey and Vice President of Industry Media Relations and Issues Management Scott Wallen.
Hi, everybody. It's Scott Wallen with Dairy Management Incorporated, and I'm so happy to welcome you to today's news conference featuring our newly named CEO, Barb O'Brien. You're going to hear from Barb in just a minute, as well as our DMI chair, Marilyn Hershey, a Pennsylvania dairy farmer. So without further delay, I'm going to turn it over to Marilyn Hershey to offer some insights on how we got to this point today, naming Barb as our next CEO to succeed Tom Gallagher. Marilyn?
Thank you, Scott, and welcome to each one of you who are on the call. You know, this is an exciting time for us, very exciting time for us. You know, I'm going to go back to the week that this was first talked about publicly. You know, World Dairy Expo is an event where we like to unveil new things. We like to have exciting news. And we knew that this was probably the most exciting news we could give for the dairy checkoff. And this has been in the works for a while. We have a farmer transition team that has led this effort. And we know that Barb is ready to do this. We know that she is more than capable. We know she has the respect, the vision, the insight to be able to lead checkoff further. And so it was just exciting to be able to hand the checkoff reins over to her and allow her to go. You know, I had someone tell me the other day it's big shoes to fill. And I would say, yes, it is big shoes to fill. But Barb has her own shoes and she has her own pathway. And we will hear about that vision today. So look forward to hearing your comments and questions and enjoy hearing from Barb.
Marilyn, thank you so much for those great insights. And we couldn't agree with you more. You know, as a staff, I think every one of us is so excited about this next chapter and what Barb brings to the table. So without further delay, Barb, I'm so happy to introduce you as the CEO and President of Dairy Management Incorporated, as well as the CEO and President of the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy. I know it's been 3 weeks on the job. Things are probably going awfully fast in your world, but you have a lot of comments you want to deliver today to the reporters on the line about yourself and your business. Why don't you go ahead and share?
That's great. Thank you so much. It has been a whirlwind, as you can imagine, but it is such an honor. It's an honor to be asked to serve as the CEO. I can't say enough. And I want to thank each of you for joining us today, because the role you play as part of our industry, as an extension to the farmers who ultimately fund this program, it's so critical. So thank you for your interest and look forward to your comments. You know, Scott, I thought I'd take a minute because although I've been here a long time, something that I have heard consistently from farmers is that they don't really know me that well. You know, where'd you come from? So maybe just a little bit of background so you've got that. You know, I actually I started my career in public relations with Burson Marsteller, a large international firm specialized in health and wellness and on the healthcare side of the business pretty quickly. Which led to a next opportunity where I joined a startup and was part of a consulting firm, not just doing public relations, but doing business planning, marketing, and public relations for food and nutrition companies, pharmaceutical companies, medical device companies, and it was a thrill. The opportunity to come to dairy came in about the year 2000 when I came in as a consultant. I actually came in to cover the maternity leave of the woman who was running communications at the time. And as it said, I never left. you know, was so compelled by the business. Tom tapped me early to step in and really learn all of the facets of the business. I ran school marketing early on. Some of you may remember the new look of School Milk, a really important school milk initiative to improve the experience. I ran strategic intelligence. I ran long-term planning. You know, I ran new business opportunities. So, and came to all of those areas with a fresh set of eyes, encouraging the staff to look at the business differently, to think consumer back, marketplace back, to ensure dairy's relevance in the long run. You know, I am not from I'm not a farmer. I'm not from a farming community. But what has been so important to me and why I stay, I mean, 20 years is a long time to be with one organization, but it's about the farmers and it, you know, our owners and what they do every day to feed people. And I'll tell you, this last couple of years with the COVID situation, seeing the surge in hunger, feeding people, you know, yeah, has just become so much more critical. And I got very involved in that personally. And it's really the farmers' work ethic and their humility that I relate to. I grew up in that kind of family, and it's who I'm going to be as a leader going forward. I think staff and the farmers can attest to that right off the bat. You know, we consider ourselves stewards as a staff. We're stewards of the investment that dairy farmers make in this program. We are also stewards of what's been built before us. So, you know, the strategies, the structures, the programs, we come in respecting that work. And I want to say I worked with and for Tom for a long time. You know, and people will say I, along with others, were critical in ultimately helping him develop his vision. So the other thing I'm really thankful for with Tom is that he put faith. He put faith in me. He put faith in others to carry forward. And that's what is in front of us. The building blocks are in place. They've been put in place over 30 years when you think about not just DMI, but really the enterprise of companies from U.S. DEC to the Innovation Center to Nutrient to GDP. It's an amazing set of companies that are all here to drive trust and sales around the world on behalf of dairy farmers. And the challenge in front of me and us is to now take that to a next level, a new level, to ensure we're doing everything we can to deliver for farmers. So, you know, really excited about what that represents. In terms of potential. It's also a very different time, as we know, in terms of the work ahead of us.
We have more right after this.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Network with the top tier of the industry at this year's California Trina Conference. Featuring presentations from the top executives from CDFA and California's Trina Commodity Boards. Register at WCNGG.com and we'll see you in Tulare on November 3rd at the California Trina Conference. The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Welcome back. We continue now with the CEO of Dairy Management, Inc. Here's new CEO, Barbara O'Brien.
You know, Marilyn, I think I've said this to you, the board's unanimous support of me for this role was such an important vote of confidence. And to some extent, I'd say it was a vote for strategic continuity. They liked the idea of an internal candidate, someone who understood the complexities of the business, where we were going strategically. But I want to say, and I've said it to you, Marilyn, and to the other farmers, and to staff, frankly, that continuity doesn't mean complacency, right? We need to continue to examine what we do and change where we need to change. And although there have been amazing results that we've been able to generate over the years, the environment's complex. We are increasingly reliant on the global marketplace for new volume. So we need to bring new solutions and make hard choices within the program to make sure we are efficiently and effectively investing the farmers' dollars. So you're going to see that in the coming months. You know, based on a meeting that I had with Marilyn and the farmer transition team that she mentioned a minute ago, I've shared some initial recommendations. First, it's about looking at this enterprise of check-off companies and making sure there's stronger integration, making sure the right work is happening in the right company so we are not duplicating in any way. Each organization has their own mission, but I am of the true belief that our real power is in working together on those priorities that can benefit all farmers and the category. Number two priority that I communicated was around transparent communications with our farmer funders to help them see and understand and give feedback to those important jobs to be done today. What is critical for growing demand and sales, both here in the United States and around the world? And then third, I believe there are efficiencies. There are efficiencies that we can drive by working more closely together that maximize our working dollars and ultimately the return on every dollar that farmers put into this program. So that's what I laid out last week in terms of sort of short-term vision and action. Longer-term, and we're gonna run things on parallel tracks. Longer term, it's about defining what's next. What's it gonna take for that long-term success? At the same time, we're gonna finish 2021. We've still got a couple months left in this year's plan. And actually, as of this week, we've officially kicked off the 2022 Unified Marketing Plan. And that we kicked it off early to ensure that the staffs across the system have time to get the operational plans in place, the partnerships in place. So let me start with the long term. And importantly, we're going to let that be guided by what the global market demands. Because again, our growth is so dependent on making sure we're not only meeting domestic needs, but we're increasingly meeting that global customers' needs and consumers' needs. So the next 3 or 4 months, we've laid out a series of steps on how to look at impact now, next, and in the future. I'm going on a listening tour, and I'll tell you, it started the first day. Any farmer, any industry leader who reached out to me to congratulate me on this new role, I asked for time. I said, give me 15 minutes. I want to hear your thoughts. I want to hear your pain points. I want to understand your view of what's working and what's not. So I'm taking a lot of input over the next 3 to 4 months. And I mean it in terms of a tour. We're going to take advantage of every meeting that's coming up, every possibility of having a one-on-one or group discussion with farmers. You know, I'm going to build on the relationships I have. I'm going to meet a lot of new farmers, which I'm really looking forward to. But their voice matters, and they need to own this program now and, importantly, going forward. You know, I'm also going to review our operations, our expenditures, to ensure that we go into next year and into the future with an eye to greater synergies, as I talked about, across the system. As we work as a collection of checkoff families. And then we're going to evaluate priorities with those farmer inputs, industry inputs, a more formal strategic analysis. I plan to go to the DMI board in the next few months with recommendations on how to shape our current and future success. And importantly, I'm going to talk about what we may need to stop doing. Focus is so important to ultimately driving impact, and today we're doing a lot. So I think we'll all welcome the opportunity to really get laser focused. At the same time, I said we're going to finish 21, we're going to implement the 2022 plan, and I just want to reiterate this construct of now, next, future, because even as we look at our annual plans, we're very deliberate about how we look at the investment now. 85% of the programs, the staff time, and the dollars are devoted to generating impact and results that year, in the year in which the dollars are expended. About 10% of the farmer's investment goes against what's next, sort of near term, next 1 to 3 years. It's about science. It's about partnerships that can help us evolve the plan to remain relevant and make sure we're bringing forward the science to support innovation, to support our work in dietary guidance, to support new claims. And then 5% is dedicated to that longer-term future work, the work of Dairy 2030, which I know you've all heard about, the ongoing interest in transforming the industry for the future. That is absolutely essential. But again, it is a relatively small piece of the farmer's investment and the staff time. Although we may talk about it a lot, I know, giving it a lot of airtime to help farmers and others understand the potential of what's next, it is relatively small. You know, let me just sort of wrapping up, Scott, I'm on a ramble.
You're
here.
You're doing great.
You know, a couple more things. When you think about this year's plan going into next year's plan, there's continuity. There's continuity in some of our strategies. First of all, it's about winning with the next generation of consumers. We know how important they are, how different that next generation, Gen Z, you've heard us talk a lot about them in terms of their spending, $100
billion
yeah, 100 in
billion.
Spending power. I wanted to get the B, not
yeah,
the M, right?
The B, correct, yes.
you know, they're digitally savvy. They are a different subset of people who have different priorities and what drives their purchase decisions. So that's number one. You'll also see us, again, fanatically focused on driving demand and sales both domestically and in key markets around the world. And we're working closely with Krista Harden at US DEC to identify those high potential markets. And then third, we continue to put U.S. Dairy's leadership out there for the rest of the world to see. We're so proud of what farmers accomplish every day, what the industry is accomplishing, in terms of what it takes to produce food sustainably. We have such a great story to tell. So, you know, again, excited about the completion of this year, what's coming up next year. And again, the opportunity that I have, but I have not alone. I have as the new CEO to work with an incredible bench of leaders across the checkoff program, with farmer leaders, with industry leaders, who I have nurtured relationships with over the last 20 years. Ultimately, it's about working together to accomplish what we know we can for U.S. Dairy. So I'm here to say I'm anticipating, as Marilyn suggested, a smooth transition. It's happening as we speak. And we are going to continue to drive results for farmers. It's what they expect. It's what they deserve. And they have my, 150% commitment to that. So I'll take a breath.
You know, it's so exciting to hear this vision and this plan in its totality. So thank you for walking us through all that. And again, I, as someone who's worked with you for so many years, we're just so energized by you and so excited for you. I know you've had this in your vision for so long, and it's great to see it, come to reality. And we cannot wait to work for you.
We hear about DMI and fluid milk in segment 4, but our news brief is up next. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. Here's your news for today. Backlogs at U.S. ports and container shortages are disrupting the supply chain. Michael Clements shares more on how those issues are impacting agriculture.
Delays in the shipping industry have a direct impact to the bottom line of farmers and ranchers. American Farm Bureau Federation Associate Economist Danny Munch says consumer purchasing changes created the issue.
During COVID, we kind of saw this switch in consumer purchasing behavior from buying services, going out, to a lot of good purchasing, so e-commerce. And when that happens, there's much more demand for products that come in containers and on barges, which puts a lot more pressure on our ports. And our ports are infrastructurally limited by the number of cranes, by the number of workers, so forth, and their ability to process these new shipments. So the more imports that you have, the more stress there's going to be on those ports.
He says that's led to congestion at U.S. ports with backlogged shipments.
So this shift in consumer purchasing behavior has kind of caused mass amount of barges at all of our ports. We've seen massive upticks in waiting times for barges waiting at anchor. An additional thing just to touch on is that labor related to trucking plays a major role in the ability for ports to process containers. If there's not trucks arriving on time, that creates just another compounding effect on the timing and processing of goods through the ports.
Munch says the supply chain issues impacts farmers and ranchers in a variety of ways.
If you have any sort of supply chain disruption, you're going to see increased prices for input. So farmers have already started to see massive increases in prices for their inputs. All of these ports are vital to farmers who use foreign outlets as a place to market their goods. So any change in the ability to access containers impacts farmers' bottom lines.
Learn more on the market intel page at fb.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
At the National Dairy Shrine Museum in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, guests can take a step back in time on America's dairy farms. You can view dairy artifacts, equipment, and learn more about the great leaders who shaped the industry. In this segment from the Holstein Association USA, we catch up with the National Dairy Shrine at the organization's annual awards banquet during World Dairy Expo. Miles Ramsey has the story.
The National Dairy Shrine is an organization committed to preserving the history of the dairy industry and ensuring its successful future. Executive Director Mike Opperman says the two go hand in hand.
You can't have a solid future unless you know where you've come from, and we certainly are able to do that. And so I think providing that foundation for growth is important.
During the recent World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin, the National Dairy Shrine hosted its annual awards banquet, where they recognized outstanding dairy leaders for their contributions to the industry.
Through the recognition of the great dairy producers, the great industry folks that we have, I think that helps sets us up for understanding what a positive future looks like and what advancements should be, and hopefully we can be a part of that going forward.
Among the award winners was John Meyer, Holstein Association USA CEO, who was the 2021 guest of honor.
I had the pleasure of receiving the National Dairy Shrine's Guest of Honor Award. So that was a special night, and it was great to see so many of the other Holstein people being honored at the National Dairy Shrine Banquet.
Bob and Kay Zawald of Bomaz Farms near Hammond, Wisconsin, were humbled to receive the Distinguished Dairy Cattle Breeder Award for 2021. It's among the highest honors for dairy cattle breeders from around the country.
My wife and I, Kay, are thrilled to receive this award. We feel it's a really big honor. I remember coming to Dairy Expo 40 years ago as a young dairyman and a high school kid and thinking, wow, these guys are great. And so I don't feel like I'm in that league, but it's an honor to be there. And I feel glad to represent the industry as a cattle breeder. And I'm glad that we can supply some of the genetics to promote the breed to further improvement.
The National Dairy Shrine also awarded about $45,000 in scholarships to college students with a passion for dairy.
I hope that when people see Dairy Shrine, they see that it's a vibrant organization, that it's an important part of the industry, and that in supporting the industry, that we're encouraging future leaders, we're honoring current leaders who have made their mark in the industry, and we're also preserving the past so that we can build that foundation for future growth.
Learn more at dairyshrine.org. For Holstein Association USA, I'm Miles Ramsey.
This is National Bat Week, and studies are ongoing in efforts to protect bat populations and bat habitats from a variety of threats. Rod Bain reports.
You may not realize the benefits of bats. Some of those include...
Many of those insects that they are feeding on are pests for row crops, they're pests for orchards, and they are pests in forests. They can also feed on some insects that are vectors for disease to both livestock and to humans.
As well as serving as pollinators and seed spreaders in some parts of the world, according to U.S. Forest Service researcher Susan Loeb. Yet there are a variety of threats to this flying mammal species.
Threats are the loss of habitat, disturbance to their maternity caves and their hibernacula caves. We're losing foraging habitat, the lack of clean water, pesticides, heavy metals that they can pick up through the water or through insects.
She adds other threats include diseases like white nose syndrome, man-made obstacles such as wind turbines, and variable climate. That is where Loeb and fellow scientists at the Forest Service and colleagues across the science spectrum come in with research projects designed to help improve bat health and bat habitats. Among research underway...
A lot of research is being done to understand white nose syndrome. Some researchers, say from the Forest Products Lab, is looking, doing a lot of research on the fungus itself. Other people like myself are looking at bats' responses to the disease and looking at their torpor patterns, how those are affected by the fungus, and looking at their population dynamics and whether we are actually seeing some stabilization in these populations. And if so, what kinds of behaviors are they exhibiting that is allowing them to survive?
Several research projects are looking at forest management effects on bats.
A number of researchers are looking at how bats respond to harvesting, how they respond to thinning, how they respond to prescribed fire, as well as wildfire.
Monitoring of bat populations are also part of a collaboration between federal and state agencies designed to collect data needed to address threats to bats.
We have developed a continent-wide monitoring program called NABAT, the North American Bat Monitoring Program, and Forest Service has really embraced this monitoring program, and this will allow us to look at the responses of bats at small spatial scales as well as large spatial scales to our management as well as to all of the threats.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Poultry companies are reducing salmonella contamination in their products, but human illness cases continue high. Gary Crawford has more.
This is a sound I recorded at a poultry processing plant in Virginia, one of hundreds of such plants in the U.S. Together, working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service, the poultry industry has, over the last few years, brought down the level of salmonella bacterial contamination in the nation's poultry products. However,
we are not seeing reductions in illness.
Deputy Undersecretary of Agriculture for Food Safety Sandra Eskin says the number of consumer illnesses linked to salmonella has remained pretty steady at about 1 million reported cases a year, over 23% of those linked to poultry products. The number of illnesses has not come down at all, even though salmonella levels in poultry products have come down, at least as measured at the processing plants. Eskin says the Ag Department, which is in charge of inspecting and assuring the safety of meat and poultry products, has been working on this salmonella situation for more than two decades.
And we've tweaked and we've changed and we've evolved, but we still are facing this clear challenge. How is it that we have contamination levels falling and no measurable change in infections?
Yes, how is that possible? Is there one place in the food chain that's the cause of it? What can be done about it? And so, Eskin says,
maybe we need to reevaluate our approach, how we regulate. Maybe there's more we could do to do a better job of bringing down those illnesses, of protecting public health and protecting our families from these infections, which for some people can be very, very serious and sadly can sometimes lead to death.
And so with that in mind, Eskin told us USDA is launching a new initiative to try to cut the number of poultry-related salmonella illnesses by 25%. But this is not just going to be a USDA effort.
Our goal here is to have a collaborative process. We know that there are many companies that are doing best practices. We want to understand what those are and what they found in their data in terms of contamination. We want to talk to public health experts, to food safety experts, consumer and public health experts. There's been a lot of discussion about these innovations, be they, again, new interventions or different ways for us to measure contamination.
USDA and others will be evaluating what's being done now, looking at things that could be done. Eskin says much of the salmonella contamination in poultry is in the birds when they come to the processing plants. And so
we need to redouble our efforts in terms of what happens on the farm, what growers do to reduce contamination.
But she says USDA will be looking at every level for ways to do that, all the way from farm to us consumers. Eskin says this is a big project, could take a couple of years. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Looking at crops around the nation now, the corn crop in Iowa is better than expected, and it shows. The soybeans, pretty good too. Todd Gleason discussed what that means for the commodity markets with Iowa State University Extension agricultural economist Chad Hart.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Iowa State University Extension agricultural economist Chad Hart to discuss the commodity markets. Hi, Chad. Thanks for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you today.
Let's begin with the state of Iowa and what harvest has been like, how yields are for both corn and soybeans.
I was going to say, harvest has been going fairly well, like most of the rest of the country. It's been a little bit ahead of average, a little bit behind what we saw last year in terms of the speed at which we're moving, but the yields have been much better than what we saw last year. The idea is that, you know, as we're looking at USDA's estimate of 201 bushels per acre on the corn side, a lot of the data that I'm hearing from farmers would suggest, yeah, that's probably a pretty good number. We're seeing similar strength as we look at the soybeans across the state. Good yields have been coming in despite some of the weather problems that we had.
Yeah, farmers and I think most in the industry did not expect Iowa, certainly Minnesota, parts of the Dakotas, but Iowa to do as well as it has. How much better is that crop than maybe you would have expected in the summer months?
Well, I think when we compare back, I mean, the easiest thing is to think back year over year. Last year, we had the combination of the drought and the derecho hit Iowa. And what we saw was, you know, corn yield average 178 across the state. So we're talking about right now, the best estimate is 23 bushels better than that this year is what we saw last year. And I think that's the big surprise here is the drought was actually deeper this year than it was last year. Yet we're seeing these better yields across the board.
What do you think of the action of the corn market as we move through September and parts of October?
Well, I think what we've seen here is this, you know, the market is trying to figure out, one, it knows there's this big crop coming down the line, but then looking at the usage pattern, are we seeing the types of, you know, purchases that we saw at this time last year? You know, if you think about the rally in a lot of our ag markets that really started to occur last August, September, October, a lot of that was driven by international demand, a lot of those export sales, and we're seeing somewhat similar patterns. Corn, very strong export sales thus far this year. Soybeans were off a little bit compared to last year.
Are you concerned about prices for one or the other crops in particular?
Probably the one I'm watching more closely right now would be soybeans. I think when we're looking at the sales on corn, that has been highly supportive. Like, say, when I'm looking at just the sales volume right now, we're basically on the same pace as we were last year. It's soybeans where we've seen that deficiency, but the data within the last week is given some reason for hope that we're seeing some recovery there as well.
Input prices for the 2022 crop, both corn and soybeans, whether you're using fall fertilizer on either one, are high, particularly for corn as it relates to anhydrous ammonia. Do you think that will change producers' ideas of what crop they might put into the ground, or is the $5 plus cash price enough, or thereabouts, for the 2022 grain to keep them planting corn?
Well, that's the deal. I think the $5 price definitely does help. But yeah, we're going to see some swings on the margin. I mean, a lot of the chatter I've heard is one of these deals of, for the most part, I'd say farmers are going to keep 90% of their plan still in place despite the input cost. But there's that 10% swing, and that could mean, you know, we're talking, especially if I look nationwide here, you may be talking 3 million acre swing, maybe from corn to soybeans, because of that higher input cost, especially through fertilizer.
How many acres would you expect in total between the two? And will they lose acres, for instance, to winter wheat?
We may lose a few there, but we're still probably talking, you know, north of 180 million acres across the two crops combined. So you're still talking roughly 90 million acres for each crop.
If the South American crops come to fruition, that would put a pretty end, that 2022 crop in Illinois, in the United States, came to fruition as normal. That would put some pretty heavy pressure, I would think, on the marketplace, unless demand is really substantial.
Yes, that's definitely what it's going to take here. If you think about it, the idea is that what we had this year was where our crop came in, you know, very, you know, record levels. We did see some deficiencies, especially out of South America, and we have seen the Black Sea crop shorten up here a little bit as well. If all three of those areas produce as they can, you're talking about massive amounts of product being available come next harvest.
Livestock sector remaining strong?
Livestock sector's holding pretty good. If anything, you know, they're hoping sort of that we do see those massive crop products, because that would help on the feed cost side as we're looking out there. But when we're looking at the cattle market and the hog market, for example, one of the key positive features has been continued strong export sales, especially when we're looking at beef. We're still looking at record shipments going out of the country. Pork, while it's backed off from last year's record, we're still on pace for the second best year we've ever had internationally.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure, sir.
That's Chad Hart. He's an agricultural economist at Iowa State University Extension. I'm Todd Gleason.
That's our news for today. We'll be right back.
Does your crop have iron chlorosis? AgroPlante has a solution for you. Traditionally, chelated iron has limitations that AgroPlante's Iron Force does not. Iron Force, with its EDDHA chelation technology, can turn your plant's iron chlorosis from yellow to green in as little as 15 days, despite unbalanced soil pH and calcareous soils. From organic certified to conventional micronutrients, AgroPlante has the product for you. Call 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplante.com.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Welcome back. We conclude now our coverage of the new CEO of Dairy Management Inc., Barbara O'Brien. They also held a question and answer period, one of the questions being, what do you see as DMI's role in the fluid milk category promotion in the future?
So fluid milk, again, talk about an area that is near and dear to my heart personally. I have spent years, actually probably since I joined DMI, I have sat as a representative for farmers on the Milk Pep board. Mm-hmm. So I've been in that boardroom for many years, have personally gone on the road and met with milk processing CEOs, cooperative CEOs, to understand the barriers within their business and certainly understand from a farmer perspective how important fluid milk is to the business. So, your question is specific to the role of fluid milk category promotion. Promotion to me is one of, it's the four P's, right? It is one of the four drivers or levers that we need to be constantly watching in terms of the product's relevance, accessibility, and ultimate consumer choice. So promotion is absolutely critical. I was on the phone this morning with Ian Ronnie, who is the CEO of Milk Pep, and we are talking about how we can complement each other's efforts, increasingly look at how 1+1 can equal 3 from a promotion standpoint, but also from a placement standpoint. What more can we be doing together with retailers and within e-commerce to make sure dairy and milk specifically is well positioned within those channels. Innovation, as you know, as a complement to the at-home experience, we need to continue to look at milk and milk-based products that meet consumers' changing lifestyles. So it's a multiple-pronged strategy in my mind. It's one, Sherry, I have to tell you, when I talked to the Fluid Milk Committee of the DMI board, I could not be prouder of what, in fact, has been accomplished over the last 4, 5, 6 years. We pulled back the onion and started to explore what it was going to take for the category to really sort of reinvigorate itself. And it was about investment in infrastructure. There has been $1 billion worth of new investment in fluid milk infrastructure. And that's fresh plants, that's long shelf life plants. So we've got the capability for both at home and away from home innovation. It's about investment in promotion, to your point. More dollars going against promotion and communication of fluid milk. Innovation, new products that balance the portfolio. So a lot of work's been done there, and it is of critical ongoing importance. So thank you. I appreciate you emphasizing that.
There is just a follow-up question we'll go ahead and get into here regarding the net zero initiative affecting a producer's ability to return his or her farm's carbon footprint data as the supply chain is already moving to collect specific information from dairy producers to formulate the carbon footprint of their brands.
Right. You know, Sherry, that's the million-dollar question. There's still a lot of question as to how the carbon accounting will be calculated and figured. There's been a lot of discussion here at DMI with our science team, along with the team at Nutrient, along with partners, about within dairy supply chain and outside of dairy supply chain. If a producer sells his or her credits to another organization, the airline industry or the paper industry, the discussions I have observed, I've heard, is that the benefit of that work is transferred to the individual organization who purchases the credits. There have been other conversations around within dairy supply chains where the customer may ultimately claim the credit, but that the producer should fully, you know, take credit for the work that was done. So that the claim for progress can be shared within the value chain. There are people who are going to be much better at, you know, explaining the current dialogue and recognizing that there's a lot of influential parties that are engaged in this discussion, but would be happy to, you know, to have others from the staff, from Nutrient, chime in on the current thinking and learning as we see this environment continue to evolve.
Marilyn, did you want to add a farmer's perspective to that question?
You know, would love to. You know, measurement is something that we talk about so often in the boardroom. We know that measurement, Sherry, is so critical for farmers. It's important for farmers to know where we are, to know our starting point. You know, when we look at the different types of ways that carbon is sequestered on our farms, I have no doubt that there's a lot of farms in the Northeast that are very close to that, if not at net zero now. But we have to have that clear measurement, and that's where we have to have alignment to have one company come out, one organization to come out with a measurement tools, and then have another industry organization come out with different measurement tools. It would provide, it would just cause a lot of confusion and disagreement on how measurement is accomplished. So the coming together, which is happening right now across the industry to make sure we have the right tools to start measuring is critical. And, you know, to know that we have 30 years to do this, we need to take our time. Number one, there's an urgency to get the measurement done. Number two, there is an importance to make sure we get that measurement done right. So know that that is the conversation that's happening. We're making progress and hope to have more to talk about here in the next several months.
You can learn more about O'Brien on the DMI website. That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Team, thanks for listening.